All right, hey everyone, welcome back. Ready to dive deep again.
Absolutely. Always ready for a good deep dive.
Yeah, it's funny. We were just talking before we started recording about this age-old problem, and it's perfect for a deep dive, right? It's this question that I think has bugged people literally forever. Why do the bad guys, why do they seem to win sometimes?
It's a classic, a real head scratcher. And, well, I mean, the Bible tackles it head on, which is what we're looking at today.
Yeah, and it's not just like one little passage either. It's all over the place. We've got excerpts today from Psalms, Jeremiah, Job, oh, and Habakkuk. Love that name, Habakkuk.
Habakkuk, Malachi, Proverbs, they all wrestle with this.
It's like this paradox, If God is just and all that, then how come sometimes the unjust seem to be the ones prospering, having it all?
It's a question that cuts right to the heart of faith, wouldn't you say?
For sure. And what's so interesting to me, just starting to dig in here, is how raw the emotion is in these texts. Like they're not shying away from the frustration.
Not at all. It's that rawness, that honesty, that I think makes them so relatable even thousands of years later.
Yeah. Like take Psalm 73.3, for example. The writer just straight up says, "I envied the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." Like, bam, no filter.
And I think we've all been there at some point, haven't we? That feeling of seeing someone cut corners, maybe even be dishonest, and they're the ones getting ahead.
Oh yeah, totally. Like it can really mess with your sense of how the world's supposed to work, right?
Exactly. And it forces us to confront this question of what wickedness really means in this context. It goes deeper than just breaking in the law.
Right. So what are some of the ways that wickedness is described in these texts?
Well, let's see. Psalm 10, for example, describes the wicked as arrogant, scheming. They disregard God. Job 21.1415 even says they flat out reject God.
So it's like an attitude thing too, right? Not just their action.
Exactly. It's the sense of pride, thinking they're above the rules, above consequences. And then there's Malachi 3.15.
Oh yeah, what does Malachi say?
It says the wicked, well, they put God to the test and escape.
It's like they're daring God almost.
Right. It's a direct challenge to this idea of divine justice. And to make matters worse, sometimes it really does look like they're getting away with it.
Which is, I think, where Jeremiah comes in. In chapter 12, he doesn't hold back. He goes right to God, asking, "Why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why do all the faithless live at ease?" It's so real.
Yeah, there's no pretense there. It's just raw human questioning, a cry for fairness in a world that often feels anything but fair.
And I think, you see that same raw honesty in the book of Job. I mean, that whole book is about suffering,
Well, exactly. And in chapter 21, he paints this vivid picture of the wicked living these comfortable, carefree lives. No worries. It says their houses are safe from fear and no rod of God is upon them.
It's like they're untouchable.
Yeah.
Which makes you wonder, doesn't it? Is there truly a price to pay for wickedness?
Ah, yes. The million-dollar question. And honestly, one that has haunted humanity since, well, probably since we first started thinking about right and wrong.
But I mean, the Bible doesn't just leave us hanging with this frustration, right?
Right. Alongside the pain and confusion, there's another perspective that emerges, a call for, well, for patience and for trust in God's ultimate justice.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. Like in Psalm 37, it's pretty straightforward advice. "Fret not yourself because of evildoers," it says. "Be not envious of wrongdoers," but easier said than done, am I right?
Oh, absolutely. It's much easier to get caught up in comparing ourselves to others, especially when it seems like they're getting ahead unfairly.
Totally. So what's the antidote to that then? How do we stop fretting?
Well, it seems like it's not just about ignoring the wicked. It's about actively shifting our focus to something greater, something beyond the immediate circumstances. That same Psalm, verse 7, says, "Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him."
Okay, so it's about trusting that maybe true justice works on a different timeline, not necessarily our human timeline.
Exactly. It's about that faith that ultimate justice exists, even if we don't always see it play out in our lifetime.
And maybe that connects to what Proverbs is getting at. In 24.19920, it says, "Do not fret because of evildoers or be envious of the wicked, for the evildoer has no future, and the lamp of the wicked will be put out."
It's that idea that no matter how successful the wicked may seem, it's ultimately fleeting, temporary.
Which is interesting because it brings us back to Habakkuk. Even though he understands that God sees evil, and hates it, he still wrestles with his seeming delay in justice. It's like he's saying, okay, God, I get it, but it's still tough to watch this happen.
And that honesty, I think that's incredibly important. Faith doesn't mean we won't have questions or doubts. In fact, I think it's in those moments of wrestling, of questioning, that our faith can actually grow stronger.
So how do we, as people of faith, how do we reconcile these two things? On one hand, the very real pain of seeing bad things happen to good people and seeing the wicked prosper. And on the other hand, this call to trust in God's justice, even if we don't see it right away.
It's a tension we'll probably always grapple with. Maybe that's part of the human experience, wouldn't you say? But perhaps it's in that wrestling, in that questioning, that our faith is refined. It pushes us to look deeper, to see beyond the surface, beyond material success, and really ask ourselves what truly matters.
And that is, yeah, that's a lot to unpack. And it leaves us with some pretty big questions to think about.
It certainly does.
Like, if the prosperity of the wicked is just a temporary illusion, how does that change how we view our own lives, our own goals, our ambitions? What is it all really about if it's not just about achieving worldly success?
Yes. What is it all about? What does it mean to live a truly good life, a meaningful life? I think those are questions worth pondering. I don't know about you, but I'm still searching for the answers.
Me too.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's the beauty of these ancient texts. They don't give us easy answers, but they do give us, well, they give us a place to start asking the right questions.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
All right. Well, that's about all the time we have for today's deep dive.
Until next time.
See ya.